Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. Service of the grace of God in AA and sponsorship since the 10th of December 1967. For that, I'm very grateful. Well, you can tell they've been someplace a long time. It is interesting when you get to participate in anything, you go through what the mind does. You know, the comparisons and the have you prepared? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? I mean, it's just the same nonsense that happens to all of us. And it's just a reminder of what is in the background at all times if I want to pay attention to it. Never leaves. We keep thinking, we think we're going to get rid of it. And it never, it's the nature of it. Never get rid of it. This format's an interesting format. And I think you get something different out of us than you do when you just someone gives an AA talk. I think you get a little bit more of a slice through our lives, and that's one of the reasons I'm here. This process, this participation, this interaction with the people who are both presenters and receivers, because there's pitching and catching. Pitchers need catchers, and the audience, the group of people that tend to come to these things, I think come receptive, and there's a difference. You can feel that when you're doing that. I love the people that I'm on the podium with. It's a respect, but mostly it's I want to get to know and can develop relationships with players who are in the game, who. All of us are practitioners, and we're imperfect, and we have issues in our own lives, and life is fully present. And but we're in the game. We're player coaches. We're doing it, and we're trying to share it. And the sharing of the process, when Bob talks about teaching, is part of how we learn. I've had a lot going on in my life the last couple of years, and I think this process has given me a stability, a sanity, and an energy and a grace that I wouldn't have had had I not participated in this process. So I appreciate being here. I want to thank Rick for picking me up at the airport and then driving around in circles for an hour and a half. We asked ahead of time how far it was, and it was just about an hour, and we never got here. I mean, it was just, so... And he was delightful, and it was delightful and very nice. I had a thought when I was rolling some of this through my mind about steps 5, 6, and 7, and one of them was that if you were surrendered, which is the state we'd like to be in when we're in this process, I mean, the steps are not mechanical. If they were mechanical, there'd be absolutely nothing to this process. You just say the third step prayer, click your heels, you'd be back in Kansas. I mean, there would be no... And it is, I think the level of activity and engagement that many of us have who have been around Alcoholics Anonymous for a while is because it isn't that way. Life is very pressing. I was reading something before I got here, and it said... So I will jump around. I know I just lost a thought. So, I am, one of the great insights that we are now in touch with at this point in this presentation is that I have a role and a responsibility for the chaos in my own life. And I think that most of us came in here not having a clue. Now, we joke a lot about, there's been so much talk about the ego, and I'm going to talk quite a bit about it myself. But the conversation that we have internally when we come in here is just clueless. It is absolutely clueless. It is when you have a conversation with a brand new guy or gal, in most cases, they just don't get it at all. I mean, and when you ask, if you make the mistake of asking them how they are... they tell you. And mostly it's a dump. They flip a switch, and the switch is the internal dialogue, and they do the dump, and they give you blow by blow of every detail, you know, of the last, you know. I went out with my wife yesterday. We went on the short trip. We got the suitcase, the blue suitcase. And that damn blue suitcase has got these clips on it that I, you know, you just, you want to die. And it is not a clue. And if you ask them how they are, they do, because they live at the level of ego and surface, and they only have a way of taking a look at life as a series of unrelated incidences that are flowing at them through the pipe. They give you the blow-by-blow experience of, or their view of what they see coming through the pipe. And one of these days you will ask them how they are, and they will say, well, I'm okay. I'm a little bit crazy, but I'm okay. It's a different answer. It's not an answer related to what's coming through the pipe. It is all of a sudden they start to get a sense that that's not a small shift. That is like a major shift. That is, I have a role and a responsibility for the chaos and the things that are happening in my life, and I have a program that I'm involved in, that if I go through the process and do the work, as we call it, or whatever, as I take the steps and get the help, talk to my sponsors, go to meetings, help other people, that process is going to heal me. And what they really don't also know, most of us come in here, we'd like to get healed, restore, you know, in the old days they talk about restoring you to normalcy. Most of us in these days come here so screwed up, there is no place in our life we want to be restored to. Take me to a different planet, make me a different person. I do not, there is no spot that I want to go back to. So it is, you know, and the good news is that they take us to a brand new spot, and that is transformational. Not only is there a healing, not only is there a completion, there is a warp drive that we have the opportunity to enter when we do this work that was unintended, not wanted, not known about, when we came in here. If I drew a circle and said, in that circle is everything there is to know, and then I took a slice of pie out of that circle and said, that's what you know. And then I took another slice of pie and said, that's what you don't know. The rest of the pie is what you don't know and don't know you don't know. Almost everything that is of importance and meaningful for us in the process of recovery comes from what we don't know and don't know we don't know. It would not be on the list of things we want when we come in. We would not, if someone gave us a list of a person who's been around for a while, we wouldn't want that list. We want circumstances corrected. We want relief. We do absolutely do not want a cure. We want relief. And over a period of time, now you can't get here with a much different mindset. And even if you sound spiritual, you've got it at a surface level, because if you had it at a deeper level, you wouldn't have the disease. And the disease would not be having its way with you. So you may have a conversation that sounds more advanced, but if you're an alcoholic and you're coming in here and you're new and you're still drinking or just recovered, there is no other conversation you can have. And if you stay here with us, do the work, get a sponsor, that conversation will shift over a period of time, and it will be incremental. Most of the time you will not see it. I mean, it is astounding the changes that people make in the first couple of years of their recovery. I see guys and gals come in this program, and to me it's a little bit more visible with the women. I don't know why, for me, but I see it with guys. They aren't the same people. I mean, you can see the change in 3 months. You just, all of a sudden, the eyes are different, the smile's different, the complexion's different, the person is present. There is, I mean, that's not small stuff. I don't know where else you would go to have things like that happen. I mean, you'd have to go to 12 different disciplines, you'd have to, you know, to have the change that takes place in the letting go process of coming in here and doing it. How many people here have more than a year of sobriety? How many people have less than a year of sobriety? Okay. It's funny, so many times when we talk about the steps, we tend to talk about the steps as we took them when we came in. We tend to talk about the steps as it removed alcohol from our lives. And for those of us that have been around for a while, that issue is still present. That conversation is a strong conversation because most of us sponsor people and most of us are taking people through the steps. But it isn't a strong conversation in my life on a day-to-day basis. Not drinking is not the issue. But alcoholism isn't just physical. It's physical, mental, and spiritual, emotional. So my conversation, or what I try to focus on, has to do with the mental and spiritual and emotional aspects of the disease as it affects me. And I think that's the conversation that most of us have. I think sometimes the first time through the steps, the first real experience through the steps, and we're more technical today than we have ever been, so I don't mean to say the absolute technically correct way to go through the steps, but the first real time, the first time you really feel connected going through the steps, those experiences are really profound. The sense of accomplishment, the sense of belonging, the sense of rites of passage, the sense that I'm doing the work, and then the first time you start to share them with someone else, you experience them at a whole other level. It is really cool. I have been through, as life has attended to me, a lot in the last number of years. And my life is overall wonderful. Linda, would you stand? I'm here with my wife. Tell more about that. I'm talking tonight, which I did not know when I arrived here. Or Lee said he told me. I did not remember that he told me. If you don't give the information to the adult in the family, it often doesn't stay. And I think that's kind of chicken crap. I think if Ralph is really here replacing Clancy, he should be talking tonight, not me. I came to AA when I was 23. I got sober a couple of weeks after my 24th birthday. I was born an upper middle class family. I was born on third base. I've been congratulating myself for hitting a triple. I mean, I was from an in. I have been. That's the story of my life. I had a great mother and father. I'm one of seven kids. I was college educated. My education was paid for. And I was an asshole. I mean, I was a family problem. And I showed up here at 23 years of age with an enlarged liver and a serious drinking problem that was diagnosed when I was 19, which I didn't get, didn't believe, didn't think was my problem. Thought it was my solution with every fiber of my body. I was raised around my father, the Second World War guys that made life look easy. They were heroes. They built businesses, large families. They were active in their communities. They lived life awfully well. Drank hard, played hard. They were really attractive men and women. And those were my models, and I chased after that. I showed up at AA without a clue. And I ran into my sponsor. My sponsor is 91 years old. I've had him as my sponsor for 43 years. He is 57 years sober. 56, actually. 57 in August. He would not be a guy that you would stand up here and want you to teach the big book. He was my big book. He will be my sponsor till he dies. And it's hard because we're more like son and father. Linda and I go over there weekly. We're family. And I've kind of patched up what I need in between that with peers. And one of the other reasons that I really do love to attend these things is I get to have conversations, not as much as I'd like to have because the schedule's so damn dense. But it's important to me to have those conversations with people who are in the same relative place in the path. You don't have to have 40 years of sobriety to have that conversation with me. You just have to be a player. And you run into players. You don't get too many. You can recognize players early in their recovery, but you don't really get to be a player probably until you have at least 5 years although some of these men and women that I see are pretty shining stars and they do pretty good, I better get talking about steps. The first experience with the steps are profound. I think the toughest thing to do when you come, in my area, Minnesota was the land of treatment centers. I think we tend to be a little bit more intellectual. I think we focused a little bit more attention on the fifth step, the fourth and fifth step, than is probably due. I think the fourth and fifth step are unbelievably important. They are, you know, irreplaceable rites of passage. But I think, and what happens, what I see in our state, and I actually see it all over, is when the wheels come off it, most of us want to do an inventory. And I think the tendency for us to want to go do an inventory is we want more information. And I would report to most of us and to myself is I am missing no information. The universe, my God, my higher power has been presenting the information to me ongoing, relentlessly, and I have been ignoring it, avoiding it, lying about it, rationalizing. Okay? I sound like I am proactive. One of the ways that I, throughout the pattern of my life, is I have lived, I wait till there is no alternative where it is done to me, and then I kind of interact with the unignorable consequences and pretend that I made a decision. Okay. And then I rebuild my story with a continuity as if that process was intentional. Other than the fact that I was asleep during the entire pre-event, I tried to avoid the event with every fiber of my body. And then the event happened, and I make up a story like I created it. And that is how we go through marriages, that's how we go through parenting, that's how we go through businesses, that's how we go through life. Not everybody. That's how I tend to go through that. The power that we need to go through and do an adequate fourth step and an adequate fifth step, I think it is tough to summon later in as we're more sober. Because we tend to go at it intellectually. And a lot of us who cycle through the steps, which I do, and we used to have these step workshops where we get a group of 10, 12 people and we go through, sometimes use the workbook, sometimes use the big book, and we use the big book as the fundamental thing that we go through. And if you go through that too often, and your responsibility and participation in that group is to do a fifth step, if you do two or three of those a year, doesn't feel like a fifth step. Fifth step to me is something that I think if it was left to my natural cycle, it would be every couple of years. You know, it might be every two or three years, but it isn't going to be every 6 months. It isn't going to be, I'd use an inventory process, so you go through that, and it just doesn't feel powerful, doesn't feel right, it feels mechanical. And the process, in order to get what we want out of this process, it needs to be, our problems are entirely psychological. Our solutions are entirely spiritual. And most of us live in the land of psychology. So when we go through, so most of the problem that I have when I come to the steps, if I make the mistake starting at the fourth step, later in sobriety, is I don't have step one, two, and three alive. And therein lies the fundamental issue of our lives. That is the platform for what all the stuff that we've been talking about, ego and the funny jokes that we talk about as we go through this. You only have two alternatives. Chuck talked about you can have a God-centered life and suffer the consequences, or a self-centered life and suffer the consequences. If you don't have some sort of impetus and involvement and grounding in the spiritual, there you have nothing else available. I have nothing else available to me other than the psychological and the ego. It's not funny. It's not a joke. It owns your life. It is the pathology. It's what got us here. We are troubled people. Ordinary people don't need a pint to a fifth a day or more to get by. the problem that we had that we used to medicate with alcohol and drugs existed before we took the alcohol and drugs. When we stopped taking the alcohol and drugs, it still exists. And that is part of the issue, the unmanageability that we have to deal with over a period of time. We have the power, we are powerless, most of us, during our drinking, to not drink. And once we take a drink, it takes us. In recovery, most of us are powerless about being self-centered. Without, we just on our own, I don't care with all the information that we and you have about ego, the program, the steps, sponsorship, unmanageability, surrender, with all the information and all the experience that we have in the steps, we are powerless to stop that process. There's been a lot of talk about smashing the ego. Words are, and I may sound like I disagree or say something that sounds a little bit different. All of us have used different words for the same processes. The differences that we would have if we would sit down and talk would be minute over the, you know, over the process. I don't think you can smash the ego. It is the spacesuit. You need it to take the trip. You cannot abandon the damn thing. There is no, you will not get rid of it. Okay? And it is an illusion. The self is an illusion. It's a fabrication. It's something that we made up, and we are fascinated with it, and we spend most of our lives interacting with it. And as the glimpses that we see it in others, which is part of what the benefit is of working with other people. We hear it in AA talks, and we hear it when we tell our stories. Most of us are so involved with our stories, we get lost in our stories. To a significant degree, you have to make the ego like a junior partner, like a six-year-old that's on the trip with you, where it never stops talking. Okay? It does have some interesting things to say, and it's fascinating, and it's pretty bright. But if you let it run your life is going to have the character that it had before we drink, and it's going to have the character that it has when it doesn't work very well. The only peace is in becoming spiritually grounded. So I want to state that I think we need to do some significant work with 1, 2, and 3 as we go back before the wheels come off it, rather than going right to step 4. If we've done an inventory and we go to step 5, fully communicating ourselves is one of the most profound spiritual actions we can take. Oh my God. Bill talks about us being emptied out. He talks about when we go to take the fifth step that now these things are about to be cast out. 5, 6, and 7 are the process by which, you know, that when he talks about people who repeatedly go back to drinking, he's talking about the fact that they haven't done the work. They haven't cleaned the house. Okay? The purpose of getting us in that position is to get us to a position of humility, emptiness, surrender, maybe even appropriate depression. They have the ego suppressed enough that there's a clearing. And in that clearing, when someone says to you, look at the painting of your life. You painted this. No one painted it for you. You painted this. The good news is we can now overpaint it. The bad news is you're responsible. The good news is if you're responsible, you can recreate it. The other good news is you're not who you think you are anyways. You've been working on someone who doesn't exist. You are going to come to that, and it's going to, and as a result of really realizing that you're working on someone who doesn't exist, you are going to be freer to let that person go and to have the experience of your true self, your spiritual self. And we talk about you're a spiritual person on a human journey rather than a human being on another journey. The fifth step for most of us is a profound, necessary experience. And in that emptying out process, we then come to 6 and 7, which isn't talked about a lot in the big book and is talked about at great length or at some significant length in the 12 and 12. I think one of the great enigmas in Alcoholics Anonymous is why, if Alcoholics Anonymous works, why, if we've had a spiritual experience, why, if we have the discipline and the steps and the structure to find God and clean house and work with others, do we continue to have significant unmanageability and chaos in our lives and sobriety? That doesn't sound good to someone who is, I see a few frowns out there. Maybe you don't have any unmanageability in your life. But most of us, when we look at what the ego does, is give you a screen. And the screen is how you want life to be, how you think life should be, and how you think they should be, and how you think it should be. And when you take that screen and hold it up and look at life through that screen, it never is the way. Nothing fits in that screen. It's all round things trying to fit in square pegs and square pegs trying to fit in round things. It doesn't work. It doesn't fit. And there lies the angst, the frustration, and the unworkability. Life is a school. Love is the lesson. Life keeps presenting us the message that mostly that it presents to us is it's not working. Most of us try to avoid that message. We are afraid to change because we are attached to the tools and the machine that we have built to live life with. It is familiar to us, and we don't want to give it up, and we are deeply invested in it. Most of us who have been around AA for a while are still using our egos to work the steps and to work the program, and that is one of the most subtle failures, or not failure, it is one of the most subtle, hidden obstacles for us in our recovery that you could possibly have. And it takes an ongoing participation in that process to get emptied out enough. And I think that is the, when Suzuki talked about what you want is the beginner's mind. It is hard to go reclaim. Experts don't have any room. The glass is full. Okay. Beginners have an empty glass. And in that, there is room to start to put in God and the steps and the program and the spirit. But pretty quickly we start to fill that glass back up with self, and we have a different engagement. I jokingly talk about 6 and 7 when we talk about, are we entirely ready to have God remove your defects of character, and we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I talk about how I had a second spiritual experience at 7 years of sobriety. And I had very significant unmanageability in my marriage, in my parenting, in my finances, and in my work and gambling. And I tried as hard as I knew how to try, as deeply as I knew how to work the steps to try to deal with the unmanageability in my life. And I found myself at 7 years bankrupt in a spiritual sense. Which was the story of my life. I start well, I just don't finish. My mother always said, Bob, you're not very bright, dress well. And I have... My mother had a tongue like a razor blade. But I was a great starter and a poor finisher. And that's everywhere. I can get in school, I can't finish school. I can, talk my way into situations, at work and life and relationships, and over a period of time, I keep running into me. I keep running into the problems and the dysfunction and the unmanageability and the chaos that I bring to the process, and it breaks down, and it is there again. And I found myself with 7 years of sobriety with about the same pile of stuff that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with, and I thought, how in hell did this happen? How did I recreate this in sobriety? Polly talks about, it seems worse than sobriety. It isn't any worse than sobriety. Most of us drank to be able to accommodate those things. Our personality and where we leak has come out of us all our lives. The problems we're dealing with, are they new? Anybody here dealing with a new one, other than the economic crisis the last 2 or 3 years? Most of the problems we have are old. They aren't weeks old, they aren't months old, they're old. Why don't we change them? We're afraid to, number one. Number two, we think they're part of who we are. We don't think they're behaviors. We think they're skin and bones. We think they are part of the essence. They're part of our personality. I've always been that way. My brother's that way. My mother's that way. They're part of who we are. They aren't part of who we are. They're part of what we do. But we so identify with them, we have collapsed the distinction between behavior and the essence of who we are. Who we are is spirit. What we do comes out of that spirit. When we get more enlightened, and how do we change? Most of us think we change with information and resistance. You couldn't pick two worse things. Information isn't deep enough. Insight isn't deep enough. Psychology is not deep enough, which is why the resolution of our problems in life have to be spiritual. And once we access the spiritual resolution, they just fall away. There is no resistance. There's no interaction. There's no more information. They just disappear. And that, I mean, which is what happened for many of us when we took the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous, when we stood naked in front of our alcoholism, looked at the truth of it, our heart changed. When that changed, for many of us, it fell away. The rest of it, we are still engaged with and entangled with at a level that is, and in the first couple of years, most of us didn't deal with the secondary stuff. We were dealing with the IRS and the police and the fundamental, get a car, get insurance, get a job, restructure your life. And then you start to get into the more subtle aspects of life, the things that allow you to stay married, to have a career rather than a job, to be able to continue to raise your children throughout rather than come back and meet them when you're 30 years old. The processes that we have to go through that most of us are not equipped to go through if we don't make significant changes. We can't stay. We're sprinters. We are not marathon people. We have significant flaws, and they're in our way. And yet, we don't have an alternative. We really think it's who we are. And today, if you talk to most people who've been sober a while, I kind of jokingly say, if you want to really do, I have another alternate way to do an inventory. And if I was going to offer myself that inventory, I would say, get a small room, reasonably small, and accommodate 30 or so people. Get your brothers and sisters and get your parents. Even if your parents are dead, get your parents. Okay? Get your employer and your past employer or your partner. Get your wife. Get your ex-wife. Okay? Get the three people in your group that know you the best. Get your sponsor and your two or three ex-sponsors. If you're new, get two or three people you drank with. And then say to them, look, we have a step in Alcoholics Anonymous where we try to get in touch with their defects of character, and I'm having trouble identifying mine. And I wonder if you'd help them. Pass out tablets and pencils. You do not even have to be there. If you have a responsible person in your life, like a wife, she could arrange the group. And then you get someone like a secretary to summarize the content. You'd have a hell of a start, baby, on an inventory. Most of us, now to get to a point where you'd even consider something, which most of us won't and wouldn't. When I first came in AA, I tried to change and I made some changes and I tried to change and then later on I tried to change and I failed. And I tried to change and failed, tried to change and failed, but I still grew. There comes a time in your recovery, in different areas of your life at different periods of time, where if you don't change, you stop growing. It's like the age of reason. All the information, you get a little bit of a free ride early on and you make some of the big changes that you have to in order to stay sober. But all of a sudden, as your life enlarges, and this is what happens to a lot of the guys I see in sober houses and gals, they do okay in the confinement and structure that it is. And then they go out. And their lives, they have to enlarge their lives, and they get re-exposed to the things in life they didn't do well. And at that point in time, you have to start, it comes at you hard and fast, because you haven't had to deal with it for a while, and it's coming at you, you know, like through a fire hose. And in that process, there comes a time where you have to change or you stop growing, and then you're in deep doo-doo. And most of us, that's what happened to me at 7 years. For 7 years, I had a resurrender. I realized that I had tried pretty darn hard to do everything that I was supposed to do, and I had failed hard thing to admit 7 years sober when you're one of the young guys making everything happen in Alcoholics Anonymous, active in service, sponsoring people, doing all the things that you're supposed to do. That surrender allowed me to stand naked in front of my life and take a look at it in a way that I had not looked at it before. And I was allowed to take the sixth and the seventh step at a depth that I had not taken them before. And that night, my gambling disappeared. I started dating my wife. I turned over the finances to my wife. I made appointments with my sponsor about going to work and staying at work and what I would do at work, and I quit gambling. Not a small change. Okay, that was like my entry into Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was what was next for me. And I think there are a series of this, you know, that keep happening. This last year, and I'll talk about it more in my, the last couple of years have been a very dramatic year for me financially and business-wise and identity-wise, and that's what happens in life. There are just different seasons in life. Going back to that group of people that we called in the room, okay, most of us would not call that meeting. Why? We don't want to change. Okay, so I want you to know, most of us intellectually say, I like to change. I've got financial troubles. I'd like to change how that is. No, we want we want different results without changing. We want relief. Send me a check. Do not give me a 2-year process that I have to go through in order to alleviate. That is not a solution. You know, that is an assessment and a judgment, and that's something you'd send an adult through. I need a check. Okay. We are not process people. We are immediate gratification is not quite quick enough. When they have all you can eat for $2, we want $4 worth. We do not, you know, so we do not want to change. We're conflicted. Part of us wants to change. We have an internal, the ego has a conversation. Let's change. You want to go do the work? Do the work. But get this straight. We're not changing. Do the steps. Talk about the steps. Go to your meetings. Talk to your sponsor. But I want you to understand something. It is not changing. That's the ego conversation. That's what's in place. You're wondering why it hasn't changed for the last 15 years? That's why. Okay. So we have to get to a point where we are surrendered enough that the ego is suppressed enough that we will start to see the spiritual truth of our lives. We are people who are we are people who have trouble being honest with ourselves. Not only are we powerless when we take a drink, most of us are deluded about who we are. Most of us have a delusion about we don't see life accurately, and we don't see ourselves accurately. And over a period of time, we don't seek out people who would help us see our lives accurately. We make deals. We'll talk about AA, we'll talk about the steps, we'll talk about sponsorship. Let's go do a workshop. But you stay out of my face, I'll stay out of yours. Bad deal. And it is hard. Most of us don't know how to use a sponsor. Most of us, to find the right person that we, and we are more responsible for that than the person we select. You have to start to develop the relationship to be able to have the conversation with the person that really pertain to the essence of our lives. And when you start to have those real, and why is the solution spiritual? Because when it's on a circumstantial plane, when it's on an ego plane, it's endless. There is no solution. You get into it, you get so confused, you've tried half the things that come to your mind. And when you get into it in a spiritual way, you don't matter because you aren't there. The false self, the ego, the identity is not there. We are there as a spiritual person. When we are there as a spiritual person, there's a clearing. There's a field that is entirely different than when we are there with our egos and our intellects. You cannot solve most of the issues over a period of time with your mind. So we have to get ourselves regularly in a position. And why do we work with others? One of the reasons, things that you do when you start working with others, is you start experiencing the forgiveness that we naturally extend to others in that process. You start to get the freedom. It's like, you know, we think we love. We don't love. Love loves us. When you're in the presence of love, when you're in the presence of forgiveness, when you're in the presence of God, you start to experience the freedom that is, and some of the stuff that weighs us down starts to fall away. That's a healing process. It is unintentional, or it's not, we don't even see it when we're going through it, and it's like we're being cleansed through a car wash as we walk these other people through the car wash. We are the benefactors of that process. So if we are still connected, and most of us with the serious issues of our lives are still connected to, you know, committed and so strongly identify with the chaos in our lives, we're afraid to let go because we think it's who we are. We think that to lose that or substantially change it is to die. And dying is kind of what has to happen. Dying is what happens in transformation. To the extent that we talk about, you know, smash Ralph, raise God up, become more God, less Ralph, more God, less Bob. That is the process. The good news is you're not going anywhere. It isn't a process like going from here to New York. It is a process of going from here to here. It is a process that is already, you already are what you are going to be when you remove what's in your way. You already are everything you are ever going to be. There is nothing that needs to be added, and there is nothing missing. It is taking away the illusion. When we come in here, we have dragged our perfect magnet through the junkyard of life. And when we come here, it is a 6-foot ball of crud and dirt and metal. And we hoist it up and hold that and look at that as if that is who we be. And in the first pass through the steps, someone gets a hose out, and we start to hose down that ball of dirt and crud and metal. And when that starts to get reduced a little bit, we start to see shiny spots, bright little spots, a gem here and there. And over a period of time, with the work and the steps, enough gets removed that we start to see that there's an object and a shape inside of that. And as you continue to do the work over a period of time, you find out that it looks like a lamp. And a couple of years later, you get a plug. A little while later, you get a light bulb. 2 or 3 years later, you plug it in the wall. Sometime after that, you turn it on. And about 10 years later, you find out it's a 3-way bulb. Okay. And we are more like a lamp that needs the power coming through us. We are more like a fountain that needs the water coming through us. We come in here like a soaker hose, and you have the opportunity to come out of here like the Bellagio fountain. Because we think the holes in us are our detriments. The holes in us are where the power comes through, where the grace comes through. Most of us are afraid of change. Most of us are conflicted. We talk intellectually that we want to change, and internally we are deeply afraid of change because we are so identified with who we are and what we do. The sixth, the fifth, the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, in the environment of having the full force of the first three steps, the powerlessness and a sense of God. Most of us are not going to go to God with the idea that we have, what I think for myself, the idea and concept of my higher power that I brought in was not sufficient for me to turn my life over. I really turned my life over to AA when I first came in, to the people and to the program. I didn't like conversations that were spiritual. It is over a period of time that I have seen the changes in you and the power come through you that I have become increasingly more open. And it's been some of the increasing work that I've done that allows me to be less afraid of opening myself up to what God would have me be. The bottom line is, I think that most of us, or all of us underneath, are made of God. That the journey that we're taking is one of coming home, not becoming someone else, not going someplace else. I think the process that we are in of improving ourselves is a senseless, impossible, ego-based process with which we start to work on the identity that we have of ourselves to improve it. It needs to be abandoned, not improved. It is the Chevrolet, it is not the driver. We do not need new hubcaps, we don't need a new paint job. Okay? We need to deal with the driver. And in that spot, in the core, in the essence, we and God are one. We joke about playing God. We are God. That's all we are. We aren't all that God is, but all we is God. And when we get connected, someone once told me that you can't learn anything you don't already know. And how many times have you sat in a meeting and heard something that was just, or even scarier yet, working with a sponsee, said something that you've never said before, never heard before? And it is right on. It is what Bob was talking about this morning when he talked to his sponsee that was having the trouble with the relationship with his father. And you watch it come through you. Okay? But when we sit in a meeting and we hear those moments of truth, we don't say, oh yeah, I agree with that. Isn't that interesting? That's brilliant. Our soul just goes, oh yeah. It doesn't think it's correct. It knows it's so. And that is why what we're trying to do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is to deepen our relationship with the power greater than ourselves. The big book is a treasure map. The big book is a menu. You can starve to death eating a menu. It is not the food. You need to order off the menu and eat the food in order to have the change and benefit that we're talking about. Part of the conversation that's been going on so far is that God's going to take care of us. One of the struggles I have, and I've been going through a couple of years of circumstantial difficulty, and I've struggled and I've been quite afraid whether God was, quote, going to take care of me. But one of my responsibilities as a person in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think, so part of my, I've gone through a process where I squandered about half of whatever I built up over my lifetime of work, money-wise. Old and dumb is a horribly bad combination. If you could change one of those variables, I would encourage you to do so. And I had 20, 30, 40, 50 conversations with people that said, look, God has brought you this far. Do you think he's going to, dump you on your ass? And I said, God hasn't dumped me on my ass. I dumped me on my ass. I think God's done a pretty good job. I don't think the God of my understanding is helping cause the problem that I was having during that period of time, nor do I think he will all of a sudden extend the or stop the laws of the universe to heal the situation that I have. I think he has given me the grace and access to the insight that he would have me have, and that part of my job is to be open to what people would tell me to make some adjustments in my life. I had problems with greed. All I've ever wanted in my life is a little more. Just a little more. If you want just a little more, there's never enough. And I don't know if I'll have time to talk about, but that's all I've ever wanted. It's a bad formula. It doesn't work. Okay? It is based on ego. It is based on greed. There are, amen. And I think God has been trying to present me with that message. I went broke in 1991 in the real estate collapse. I'm in the real estate business. I made it all back, and I've been suffering pretty circumstantially suffering during the process of this economic collapse. And if you would have caught me, if you would have made the mistake of asking me how I was sometime in the last 2 years, I had this wonderful story that I would tell you, which was all self-based, all nonsense. It was just absolute nonsense. Were the circumstances there? Yeah, they were there. Was that what was really going on in my life? No. What was the important part of what I was going through? is I was back in school, back in front of a lesson that I kind of learned 20 years ago, and then I unlearned it 10 years ago, and the universe represented it to me, and I needed to learn it again now. And boy, I hope I learned it now. I am so sick and tired of school that I can't go through. The worst part of it was the depression and the fullness of and the self-involvement during that process. Okay, the resolution came in a surrender at some point in time where I said, okay, I will do whatever I have to do to resolve this mess. And it was pretty complicated, okay? And I'll talk about that maybe later tonight. One of them was, as I retired, they brought the company, we brought in a new CEO. Guess who the old CEO was? And the company is doing better since I left, which is, I think it's accidental. I don't think it's related. I expected everybody to have a conversation about, oh, please don't leave. And no one had that conversation, including my son, who is now one of the people running the company. And there is some stuff that I need to take a look at and inventory in a way to go through. But before I got willing to make those decisions, there was a lot of pain to get me in front of it, and mostly it was just getting over my resistance. And I was, you know, and that's all it is. I mean, we're good people going through life. And most of us are doing the best we know how to do. What is the opportunity that we have to start more effectively dealing with our defects of character? It's to raise our consciousness. What is the process for us of raising our consciousness? It's the 12 steps. But not the 12 steps at the level of ego, not the 12 steps at the level of self, not the 12 steps at the level of psychology, and not the 12 steps at the level of thinking. The steps are spiritual, not mechanical. There is a way of being that we have to present ourselves in those processes to get the full measure out of the steps. And it is not something that I have been able to snap my fingers and get myself to be in such a way that I would like to be at every moment to be able to go through and have the process of taking the steps. I have persistent issues that I've tried to deal with in my life, and I have not dealt with them. And they weigh on me. But I don't think anybody doesn't have some of that. I think we all leak. We leak in different places. But I think we need to prioritize the problems in our lives. Like if they're illegal, that would be a good priority to get rid of. If they are harming the people who we are close to and that we love, that would be a good thing to get rid of. And to a very significant extent, I have been able to rid myself of most of those in my life, to a degree that a person with my tendencies, my personality, my 60 miles an hour head first, no helmet, spring loaded process through life, is I do less harm today than I have ever done at any other point in my life. I am more loving than I have been at any other point in my life, and I am in the game. I am in the process. I am in the steps. I have advisors. I have sponsors. I have a sponsor. But mostly, I just treasure the exposure that I get through this process. I treasure that I found a place that wasn't about abstinence, that wasn't just about not drinking. I treasure the fact that I have been in a place forced to do work that I did not want to do and ending up with results that have made me a better person than I would have been had I never had the problem of alcoholism. I'm in love with my wife. I have a good relationship with my sons, which I might never have had due to some other issues and defects of character that I have, which I will share tonight. The steps are powerful and the steps work, and the steps are a process of us being let out of jail. You're going to hear Mari talk about steps 8 and 9, which I think put the cap on the, you know, put the rocket booster on the whole thing. I think if you want the prima facie evidence about whether you've done the work, you're going to get that conversation when Mari gets up here and has that conversation. But without the right heart, this isn't a head deal. This isn't an information deal. get up in the morning, put your head in your heart, and get about the day. Love God with your whole heart and do whatever the hell you want to do. Thank you.
We have a good way of closing.